Being a Christian woman and walking in God's calling for our lives can be a difficult task. With the world and pop culture telling us to be one way, and the Bible saying another, you kind of end up feeling like an other. Well, you're not alone. Join me now and my friends as we navigate life in our 20s and 30s, while making sure we live out our faith, embrace our femininity, and looking cute. We discuss pop culture, life, careers, relationships, and so much more. Prepare to be entertained and educated. I know you're going to love it. Join our movement and embrace being another girl.
The views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not reflect our employers. Enjoy. Hello, everyone. You are listening to Those Are the Girls with Mallory and Friends, and I'm Mallory. We are celebrating life this month. This is Life Month on the Those Are the Girls podcast. If you are new here, this is a huge, important, you should say, tenet of our brand, and it is celebrating life and walking in our femininity and just realizing that we are, like, God blessed us as women to be able to bear life, to help life, and all the things. So I'm really excited about today's guest. Her name is Jade Lee. I met her about 2 years, I guess a year and a half, 2 years ago, doing pro-life outreach with Live Action. And I'm just really excited for you guys to hear her story and some of the things that we're going to be discussing. So I'm going to read her bio first and then we'll get into it. So Jade Lee is a global humanitarian, missionary, writer, and pastor to the poor and marginalized. She's the creator of Black Woman in Pro-Life. She's also an outreach coordinator for Live Action. She loves inspiring hope through Jesus Christ, bringing dignity to all, and sharing God's love for humanity. Jade believes in the miracles and light in the darkest places. She is also a loving wife and mother. So everyone, please welcome Jade Lee to the podcast.
Hey, everybody. I'm so excited to be here today.
Thank you so much for coming on. And I guess we should just get right into it. We have a lot to discuss today. The first thing I do want to know is, how did you get involved just in ministry in general, with your pro-life work, with all of the other work that you do, your books? What made you, how did it all start?
Wow, that's a loaded question. I've been doing ministry for 19 to 20 years now, so it's a long story. But it all, I would say it began, believe it or not, when I was 5 years old. Yeah, so when I was about 5 years old, my father would take me and my siblings out to homeless shelters. And we would minister to the homeless, we would feed them. And usually while he was with the adults, we were with the kids. And so that was my first really outreach, ministry outreach. And it really developed compassion in me, as well as me growing up in a pretty poor area of New Jersey. You could, some people would say it was a hood, some people wouldn't, but it was, you couldn't leave your bike outside or it would be gone the next day. You know, that kind of environment. Pizza Hut wouldn't show up at your front door because they wouldn't come to my neighborhood. We never had an ice cream truck come to our neighborhood because they were afraid someone would get robbed. And so that was what I was just used to, being in both the ministry world and then the urban population that was underserved and really in need. So it began there. And then I would say it reset when I became a college student and I decided to give my life to Jesus. And when that happened, I didn't expect ministry would happen after that. I just wanted to live for God. But I began doing ministry, college ministry, and it grew from there to many different forms and expressions. As far as the pro-life movement, that happened out of me just, again, wanting to serve God, wanting to be more involved in prayer expressions. And I think the first person I heard teach on a religious apologetic for being pro-life was Lou Engle. I was at a prayer meeting, and it was a stadium event with thousands of young people there. And I was fascinated with all these young people wanting to pray. But I never thought about abortion. I never heard anyone teach about abortion. And it was there that I began to hear, not only was abortion affecting our nation and the nations of the world, but it was affecting my own community, which I was really stunned to hear the statistics of how many African Americans were being aborted compared to how many of us were being born, our birth rate. And so, especially in the new state of New York, the population was less as far as how many people that were being born than how many people were being aborted. And so when I found out about those stats and I heard a strong scriptural apologetic for why abortion was wrong, I felt like I needed to do something about it. And this is at the age of maybe 23. I was very young. But at that time, I didn't know what to do. So I got involved in sidewalk counseling and praying for those that were aborted and teaching. I showed films at our church at that time. We had planted a church. So I was showing college students these films that would educate them on how abortion affected our community, the African American.
What's a film that you show that you would recommend to anyone?
What was that film called? I should have had that ready for you. I didn't expect to talk about that, but I'll leave it for you. I'll send it over to you.
Okay.
It's about genocide. My Alpha 21. I don't know if you've seen that. Have you seen that?
No, but I remember you recommending that. And I remember saying, I'm going to watch it. I want us to watch it as a family. Yeah. So that is definitely like on the list, but I remember you talking about it.
It's older now, but it is free. There's a whole website. If you just Google My Alpha 21, you can watch the entire film for free of charge. And it will blow your mind. Even if you understand the history somewhat, or you understand the statistics and how it's affecting our community, you still will learn a lot, I think, from that film. It's well documented. I'm a researcher as well. I'm a theologian. And so I believe in strong research, not just opinions or feeling based information. And it's a very strong film. So I was showing that to the next generation. And then we did we led a movement called Freedom's Cry, and we went across the nation to 78 historically Black colleges and universities to pray against abortion and to educate the next generation on how it was affecting our community. And that was just a move of God. We were astounded at how many pro-life leaders, pregnancy care centers, people just found out about us online, and they were housing us. They were feeding us. You know, we had rental cars, and we just drove across the nation in three different trips. We went all the way to California and came back to Atlanta and down to Florida and up to DC. So that's a synopsis of how I originally got into the pro-life movement and ministry work.
Wow. So I have a quick question about, you said you went to HBCUs across the country. I'll figure out how to say this the least controversial way. I know that a lot of people and groups want to reach out to HBCUs. And right. I guess, what is the most effective way you think it is? Because at the end of the day, everybody, we're all people. So it shouldn't be like what's the trick to do? It should just be like a reaching out. So what do you think is an effective way to do that?
Well, I have a little story about that. A few years ago, probably about 6 years ago, honestly, now, there was a man, and he was in North Carolina trying to start a movement that similar to what you're talking about, to reach HBCUs. And it wasn't just African-Americans reaching African-Americans. It was a mixture of ethnicities, people that just felt called to college ministry. But maybe they were an InterVarsity or a parachurch organization like InterVarsity that wanted to reach HBCUs, and they were struggling with it. What we found at that time is that it is much harder to infiltrate HBCUs for a number of reasons, as far as sharing the gospel or starting a new ministry, because HBCUs are different. I am an HBCU grad, so I know a little bit about it. I went to Hampton University. But HBCUs all have chapels. And if you look at most majority schools, they don't have chapels on campus the same way. The whole structure is very different. A lot of these the campuses were started really as seminaries, and people don't know that. Like Morehouse College was started in the bottom of a church. Spelman College was as well. They were started to send missionaries out of the Black community to Africa and to raise up ministers of the gospel. So there's really already a lot of religious structure on these campuses. They already have their own chaplains. So when you come in to start a ministry, a lot of times they're going to say to you, we already have a ministry. We don't need that. We already have a very strong, historically based ministry here. And so the way that I feel like is best to go about it is to not necessarily start a ministry all the time, but sometimes look at a way, what need can you meet that's really practical on the campus? A lot of these campuses, what's lacking is leadership skills, because just because they're college student doesn't mean that they came from an affluent neighborhood or a home with two parents or a strong background outside of the academia. Just in their social emotional learning and skill set. So if you start an org like that, the campus is going to say, yes, we need that. We need to teach students leadership skills. We need to teach students soft skills. We need to teach students how to just operate in society or deal with painful emotional realities of their childhood. And I found that to be the most effective. I feel like HBCUs are much more like going out and trying to minister in a nation that hasn't heard the gospel before, as weird as that sounds. It's going to take much longer if I try to share the gospel maybe in Iraq or Iran. I'm not going to expect as many churches to develop as quickly. And if I was in a mission agency, they wouldn't expect it either. But what I've seen is that organization I told you about, that the man was starting to reach HBCUs, within a matter of 2 or 3 years, the entire organization dispelled. And it did not work out because people were trying to use the same methods as they would at maybe a Georgia Tech or a Georgia State or University of San Francisco. And the same approach were at Georgia State right now. I can go on campus and start an organization. They have so hundreds of organizations, they wouldn't even question it. But for HBCUs, they're trying to keep their legacy strong, and they're very just structured in the way that they accept new organizations. So I would say that's how I would go about it. I'm not sure that like a pro-life ministry would be as quickly welcomed at all on any campus, but especially on HBCU. So you would just have to use a lot of wisdom about how you approach the school and actually coming in to serve, not just to push your own agenda.
I really like that you said that. As I've grown as like, the pro-life activist, that sounds so cringe to say that, but like, yeah. I don't know any other word to like describe it. I have really realized that, you know, obviously we're anti-abortion. There's also a whole nother component. Like, I don't want to overshadow, you know, let's not murder babies, but there's also another component because people in general are mind, body, soul. So there's so many other parts of us. And the part where we can change culture of the aspect of abortion is through relationships, building relationships, is through showing love to people, kindness, meeting people where they're at. And I really like that you said that about coming in on the leadership aspect, because I do think if people, because even, you know, I pray that we will have abortion completely abolished in the U.S. But even if that happens, they are going to be people who are going to try to do underground abortions, and they're going to try to go other places. So even to get that to stop, we'd have to change our culture. And part of that is to get people to listen to us and like understand what we have to say. And people don't care what you have to say if you're yelling at them, if you're, you know, being mean, if you don't truly care about them. I love that you said coming in a different in a different way, because that's really how we're going to make this change.
Yeah, right. It's holistic ministry, holistic outreach. Like, if you're not a believer, I would just say it's an outreach. You know, I'm a humanitarian. It's caring about humans. There are atheists that are pro-life. There are agnostics that are pro-life. There are Muslims. And I mean, it's just the pro-life movement is such a wide range of people. And they're not pro-life because of their religious belief system. They're pro-life because they believe that human lives are important and human lives deserve the opportunity to live. They just believe morally in right and wrong. And so, of course, my ethic is going to be a lot more scripturally based, theologically based. I have more different reasons, but at the end of the day, I agree with that humanitarian stance that life is important, life matters, and we should value life regardless of whether you think that life is going to be the same as yours, lived out the same way, have the same opportunity as yours or not. Because listen, we hear stories all the time about people that came from disadvantaged positions and look at their life now. You never know what's going to happen, what choices people are going to make that will lead them to have a higher quality of life. But with that said, because life is important, because we value life, it is important to have a holistic view and take on this. Number one, if you value life, then I would say that it's important to care about every aspect of that person's life. I'm not pro-life because I just care about babies being born, even though I absolutely do. I'm pro-life because I want to see those babies live a prosperous, strong, victorious, cared for mentally, emotionally, physically, educationally, societally strong life, period. And that's what I would say HBCUs care about. They want to see flourishing in the next generation of leaders in the African American community and beyond. And if you don't have that spirit and heart, which I've seen people not have that, mm-hmm. and try to go into the campus with just this one singular motive, people feel that. And they're going to kind of close that door of favor for you, and you won't be able to move forward the way you want to. So it's kind of, you have to buy the whole field.
Yeah.
And really care about people at all stages and all walks of life if you want to see this change. And the last thing I think of is the girls that I have talked to that were like, I've just recently in the fall talked to a girl that was very abortion minded. She just had an abortion 2 weeks prior. And she was at an HBCU and she was trying to figure out what to do next. I mean, it was graphic, some of what she shared with me that I won't share in this interview. But I will say that the reason why she was pro-choice was not because of an ethical reason. It was because the people that were caring for her, that were providing resources for her, that were driving her to the clinic, that were paying for her needs, that were there to be a listening ear, that cared about her schooling, that cared about her background and her challenges growing up, were pro-choice people. And so that's what changes a person's heart, right? Is that like that saying that says people don't care about how much you know, they care about how much you care, right? Mm-hmm. And so if they see your care, and especially in historically Black situations, a lot of the just natural physical help is what moves our community for whatever reason. Like when they see you give homeless people food, that moves their heart. When they see the faith is lived out in a very practical way, rather than just in the spiritual way, even though I think the practical is spiritual. So yeah, if we're talking about that particular segment in America, that's going to be really, really important. And if we miss that and we only say, I'm going to give you the gospel, or I'm going to tell you ethics of what is right and wrong, I think that a lot of times it comes across like you don't really care about my real needs that I'm dealing every day. You just care about what your agenda, you know, you care about politics, or because a lot of people see being pro-life as a political issue, not as a relational issue, not as a human issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to shift that narrative by being more humane in our approach a lot of times. Not that the pro-life community is not, I think people just don't know, right? Because if, like you said, we're just yelling, you got to be pro-life, or you're sinning, or you're murdering, right? Even if that's true, if that's our narrative, but we're not showing all the work that pro-life organizations like are doing in practical ways. Like I get emails every month from a lady that does pro-life work, and she's helping this moms and babies. And they're, I mean, one girl, she's walked with her since her babies before they were born, and now they're like 4 or 5 and she's still helping them. But that needs to be broadcast more.
Yeah, I agree. And kind of to piggyback off what you said, my mom and I talk all the time about how you can always tell when someone has made the pro-life thing just a political statement, and when they have made it this thing where it's like, I'm pro-life, and they don't think too much about it instead of like the whole, like you said, holistic aspect of it. Right. And it comes, like, people can see it. It comes across that way. Mm-hmm. So my next question for you is, can you tell us like a story of when you have seen God's hand in your ministry? I'm sure you have tons of stories, but like, what is your favorite story you've seen God's hand in the different times you've done outreach, specifically like a pro-life story or something like that?
Okay, well, I don't know if I have a favorite one because there's so many of them, but I, for whatever reason, my heart is really, and my mind is on the young lady I just told you about.
Okay.
From the fall, I believe it was September or October that I met this young lady at a mobile clinic, and I was just there visiting, and she came into the clinic. I mean, this clinic had girls coming in all day long, like back to back, that were considering abortions or just had one, and they were trying to get post-abortive care physiologically and emotionally, spiritually. I sat down with this girl because I was just in the room, and sat with her for maybe 2.5 hours and was able to do post-abortive healing. And what was powerful about this is this was a medical clinic that did ultrasounds, and ultrasound techs were there. So she didn't come in that room for post-abortive healing in her mind, right? She came in that room to get medically checked because of practical service was there. But when I say God moved, I was able to pray for her. She was weeping. I listened to her life story for hours and just was able to minister to her, and we shared the gospel with her. I think she walked out with a Bible.
Oh, wow.
This is what this work is about, right? Mm-hmm. Is that she felt loved. She felt comforted because someone was willing to just be quiet and listen in a non-judgmental way to her life journey. And how did she get up to this point? Did she get up to this point because she's a murderer, cold-blooded murderer? No, she got to this point because of the lack of resources and help at home and around her, and real emotional needs. Like when I do ministry training for couples and for parents and their children, anything relationally, we use a system of social emotional learning that's been proven to work around the world in the academia and different areas. It's been well researched by a professor or doctor of psychology. And one of the things that we teach is that people don't just have physical needs. Physical needs, we all know, like you need air to breathe, you need housing and shelter, you need food. But when we think about the emotional, we forget that that's just as much of a need as the physical for people. And especially in the church world, sometimes that's overlooked, you know, and you see it come out when people are mourning or grieving. We don't know how to respond. So we say things that are well-meaning and well-intended, but they're not always taken in a way that heals the soul. And so we comfort by mourning with those that mourn. And that's one of my favorite stories, just because I didn't do anything. I didn't give her anything outside of the Bible, but physically, but she was healed so much in that moment because I was able to mourn with her. I didn't devalidate her experience. I didn't accuse her, you know, but we were able to just come alongside her in her journey and love on her and give her the freedom to make her own decision, even though we didn't necessarily agree with her decision. At that point, it was over. She needed love and healing. So those are the
and
type
I think
of moments that
this also
shows,
like,
church,
this is an,
if the church world can grab a hold of that, how do we love through pain? How do we love through lack? How do we love through poverty? How do we love through great need? Then we will regain a lot of traction with this nation, because that's people's biggest critique of the church, I think, right now.
Yeah, everything you said is completely right. And I think that this also goes to show the next time she's in that situation, she will remember what you said to her. She will remember the pregnancy mobile facility that she went to. She'll remember the Bible that she has. And this is also how we can stop. Like, this is a good example of how do we change the culture, because we can continue and we will continue to work on it from the legal aspect. But we also have to change the culture. If we're going to truly help people, we really care about babies, women, and just the overall well-being of our fellow men, we have to change the culture. And that is a good example. That's a great story. Next question is actually a Patreon question. And it is, what has been the most challenging part about reaching women who are abortion-minded? And if you want to know that answer, you can join our Patreon for $5 a month minimum. And we'll answer that on the Patreon. So if you're listening, you can head over to the Patreon to get the answer to that question. Okay. So my next question actually was, what can we do to improve outreach? But we kind of talked about that earlier. Okay. So I'm going to ask, you created this, I guess, organization, Facebook group, Black Women and Pro-Life. What was the meaning behind that?
Well, Black Women and Pro-Life started in 2019, right before the pandemic. And it started as a group, support group for pro-life women that happened to also be Black in ethnicity. And so people around the world, you know, but mainly in America. And this group started because, as I talked about before, when I was in my 20s, I was running hard, even in my early 30s. And then at 36, the young age of 36, I got pregnant. And I was not able to do the type of work I was doing before. And so my kids were very small. I wanted to do something, continue to be involved in the pro-life movement. And the thought came to me, you know what? I might not be able to run around the nation and lead movements, but I can do something right from home online. And I asked some of my pro-life friends that are really involved in the movement, national leaders, does anything like this exist for Black women? And they all said, no, I don't think we have anything like this. So I started the group and it just grew and grew and grew. Now we're, I think we're around 305 women around the nation and the world that are pro-life in all different sectors. It's bipartisan, nonpartisan. We have Democrats, we have Republicans, we have state representatives, we have lawyers, we have doctors, we have artists, we have writers, we have pro-life activists. I mean, you name it, is in that group. We have writers and preachers and all different types of leaders from different backgrounds, but it's a safe space for Black women. And we have a conference coming up in February 9th to 10th of 2024. So about a month from now, we have a conference that will be our first in-person conference. I'm really excited about that. And we're gathering national and regional, local pro-life leaders to come together. And even those that, well, the leaders will be teaching at the conference and doing large groups, small groups. And then the second day we'll have a gala where it's going to be a sneaker ball. It's going to be so much fun. And we'll honor different leaders with awards, have live music, a plated meal. And it's just going to be an amazing experience. And it will be historical because this is the first time I believe that there has ever been a pro-life gala or conference with all Black women. Everyone's invited regardless of their ethnicity, of course, but all the leaders will be Black led. And we'll have leaders like Dr. Alveda King, some of the legends, right, that are here, who is Martin Luther King's niece. We'll have Catherine Davis, she's ran for governor in the state of Georgia. We'll have Christina Bennett, who is one of my dearest friends. that tells her story of how she was almost aborted and does communications for Live Action and for other organizations. So we'll even have a male panel with Justin Gibney and my husband, Corey Lee, who's a theologian at Fuller Seminary. We're just going to have a great time. And it's going to be very educational, but also we're going to keep it light enough that you can enjoy it and meet new friends.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this conference. Those Are the Girls will be there. We'll have a booth and everything. And I think part of the reason why I'm really excited about it is because I think it's going to reach a new demographic. There are a lot of Black people that are pro-life. And I think that just because of the nature of society, I guess, or how social media works, you don't see them a lot. You know, the big, when you think of, oh, who are the pro-life leaders? Technically, I feel like you don't really think of anyone Black specifically, but there's a lot of us out there. And I think it is important for us to at least have a place where we can share our stories. And I will say, in the last year or so, I have attended different faith and family events that are for Black people. And one of the things that I have loved about it is I have met so many people that have done amazing, fantastic things that you have never heard of. These are people who have saved probably hundreds of babies, that have gone who have fought battles, that have gone to jail, that have done just all of these amazing things that you have no idea who they are. And part of it is just because of their humility. Because, you know, not everybody wants to do the social media thing, which is fine. And then the other part is their stories just aren't being told. And I think an event like this is so important so you can hear it. And it can encourage you and, like, just remind you that, A, you're not alone. And then, B, like, this is what we believe. And I think that, you know, if you're listening and you're Black and you're kind of like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this, I think it'll be good for you to hear everyone there's perspective of it, because we all have reasons why we are pro-life. And I think that everyone's story is different about how they got there, about, you know, just a variety of things. Everyone's story is different. And I really think it's so important to hear other people's stories. Because like I said, there's nothing wrong with, you know, the main people who are, you know, when I think of a pro-life activist, you know, we all think of the same, like, three or four people. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I do think we should be highlighting other people's stories, because that's probably the pro-lives, people on the right, conservatives, whoever, that's probably our biggest flaw, is we're not good storytellers. Like, I don't know how or why, but we just aren't good storytellers. And we keep posting, or we keep uplifting the same people. And I think just adding a variety will really help other people come into the movement. Because I do think there are girls out there, which is why I started the podcast and why the podcast is so important to me. I do think there are girls out there who do agree with us, who, when we sit them down, talk to them, you know, face woman to woman, and like really have a good, genuine heart discussion, that they do agree with us. But all they see is like some of the negativity, or they don't see people that look like them, or they kind of feel like they just wouldn't fit in. So then they just cower to people who are in their select little group. And I think if we can continue to just highlight other people, to show different stories, to show that we aren't, you know, old, mean, evil, bald white men, I think that will help. I really do think that'll help. So I'm excited for this event. What's the website if someone wants to register?
Well, right now the website is being built out the rest of the way, but if you Google Black Woman and Pro-Life Conference, we have an Eventbrite page where you can register directly there, and then the website will be added to that page.
Perfect.
And so I'm going to add that this conference is going to, hopefully, the goal is to change the narrative a lot about the stereotypes of what does it mean to be pro-life. Like, I think a lot of people would be surprised how many people, even in the Black church, that are pro-life, that their stance is pro-life, no matter how they vote. That's a whole nother story.
Right.
They think pro-life, they believe that being pro-life is right, even though they wouldn't use that terminology, right? And so this is happening during Black History Month, and our gala is a Black History gala. So we're showing that to be pro-life doesn't mean you're anti-Black, right? It doesn't mean that you don't agree with celebrating the achievements of Black woman and the Black community and of our nation's past. And so we want to celebrate that. We want to remember that even with the challenges like racism or Jim Crow and all those things that have happened in a nation, there are so many great achievements that we have made and advancements as a whole, as a nation as a whole and as a community. And at a time where it would be easier to get frustrated and just say, oh, everything's wrong, we want to uplift, we want to promote, we want to celebrate those achievements as we're progressing along, especially in this area that can be really hard. If you are Black and you're pro-life, it can be very challenging to be public about it. And I'm hoping that this will be a way that it's done that doesn't feel intimidating. It doesn't feel like you have to make some super stance or stand outside of the clinic. You can show up here and you'll be walk-ons and you'll get to meet people that have a similar ethic and mentality. We'll even have booths, like we have booths that are ranging all the way to, there's True Glory Hair, the wig company, and they're releasing new wigs. They're coming.
Oh, cool.
All that. So I've been surprised how many companies are willing to come alongside us. I'm like, what? Like, they don't care that we're pro-life. They're actually proud to be a part of this. And so that's been exciting for me as a leader, because I didn't know how this would rub different organizations and companies, but they're coming alongside this. So let's gather together to change the narrative. You see me, I look like a Black girl, right? And, have braids and everything in my head, but I am pro-life. So we don't all look the same. We don't all have to act the same. We're not all white men. And we're proudly and boldly saying that we are pro-life in every way, without shame and without a ministry of condemnation.
Oof. I love that. That was good. So I'm really excited for this. If you guys have any questions or anything like that, you can reach out to me or Jade. I'll link her social media on our in the show notes. And if you have any questions, reach out. I would love to see you. I'd love to meet you. Let me know if you are there and you heard it on the podcast. Let me know. So I have one last question for you. And this is a question we ask all of our guests. Okay. And if every girl in the entire world was looking at you right now and needed advice, what advice would you give her? And it doesn't have to be like centered around pro-life. It could be about anything.
Well, the biggest advice that I would give you is live your journey. Live your journey. In a world, especially in the social media age that we live in, I didn't grow up in the social media age. I can remember when we first came on an AOL chat and it was just like, it was taking like 2 hours to get online. And I remember going in a chat as a teenager and seeing people around the world. And I was like, wow, I'm talking to someone in Asia. But now it's like on your phone, it's at your fingertips, the whole world. You have a whole world of people you could compare yourself to. Whereas me, I only had magazines and a television that I watched maybe an hour a day, right? And so I have way less coming at me information wise. And so I would say, don't get caught up in that. Don't get caught up in trying to measure up and be someone that you're not. Live your journey, embrace it fully, and know that at the end of the day, you will really be upset with yourself. One thing you will regret is not being who you really are and trying to people please, trying to assimilate, trying to make yourself someone that doesn't really match who God intended you to be and who what your values truly are. I've been down that road and I can tell you right now, it's not worth it. It's much better and you'll have a much happier life if you just live the journey that is authentically you, and not just authentically you in a selfish way, but authentically you in a God-ordained way. Who has God called you to be? What is God giving you to do? And what are you supposed to offer the world? I'll leave you with this last story. My best friend Erica just passed away. And I went and officiated and eulogized her funeral. And This lady was an amazing woman, but you know what was most amazing about her is that she was authentic. She died at 49 years old, but there's not one person I know that she didn't touch their life. She didn't have a large platform. She wasn't some nationally known person, but she was globally effective. And there are national and global leaders that knew who she was because behind the scenes, she just never changed who she was called to be. So know that when it's time for you to be eulogized, the people that met, that you ministered to, that you cared for, that you loved authentically as yourself, if you're true to who you really are, it will be shouted from the mountaintops. So live that life that will leave a legacy, not a life that is just for the here and now.
Ooh, that was good. I hope everybody soak that in, and that's good. Thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. I think this is a great episode, a wealth of knowledge. I also think this is a good episode to share with your friends that aren't even pro-life. If they're, you know, a little sympathetic to the pro-life cause, go ahead and share this to them. Even if they're not, I think it's good because it just also goes to show, like we mentioned earlier, that there's pro-life looks different, has a different face than just what's kind of nationally advertised. So make sure you share this episode. Make sure you like, rate, review, comment. Let us know if you have an amazing pro-life story. Leave it in the comments. Let us know why you are pro-life. That's another good one too. Maybe I'll put that as a Spotify question as well. Yeah, I guess that's it. Do you want to add anything else, Jane?
No, just thank you so much for having me. We are those other girls. We don't have to assimilate and fit into what society says we are. It's okay for us to be unique and to be different than the status quo, because everybody else will catch up with us at the end of the day. Like,
love that.
as a descendant of Harriet Tubman, she went and did all that alone, right? She didn't have a crowd with her, but the whole nation has caught up with her now. So some of us were forerunners. We're going ahead of our community. We're going ahead of our nation. We're going ahead of many others. But if you're on the right side of history, then it will not be in vain. So I just want to encourage everybody that is pro-life, that is trying to live your life in the way that you feel led to not give up, to not be disheartened, because at the end of the day, you're going to be so proud of what you've decided to do and who you have ultimately done it for, our creator. But thank you, Mal, for inviting me. It's been a lot of fun chatting with you today.
Amazing. All right. On that note, everybody have a great day, night, evening, however, wherever you're listening. Bye.
Bye.